Hello again, everyone, and welcome to today's show. If you're one of the 130 million people that are dealing with SIRS, Lyme disease, autoimmune disease, or other conditions that are impacted by mold on a daily basis, and you need to learn how to eliminate that exposure, then you're in the right place. My name is Brian Carr, and you're listening to Mold Finders Radio. All right, everybody, what's going on here for another day? I'm actually really excited. So I met this person, gosh, what year is it, 2024? I probably met this person in 2016, somewhere around there. It's been a long, long time. And it's been a while since we spoke. And so I was kind of excited to have this conversation. And when we were talking beforehand, learned about something that he was working on. And I was like, whoa, this is really cool. Why don't we just get you on the podcast and let's talk through it? Because I think it'd be pretty valuable for everybody that's listening. It's in line with what we talk about a lot, but there's also some kind of variants off, which I think will be really helpful for you guys too. And it's a project that he's working on. I'm not going to go into it and I'll let him do that. But everyone, this is Dr. Tom O'Brien. Dr. O'Brien's a pretty big name in the functional medicine world. For those of you that don't know, he's, you know, viewed as an expert on a lot of the sort of chronic health issues that come about where traditional doctors don't really know what's going on. And he's one of the people that have a better idea of how to figure out what's going on and help guide people there to get better. So with all of that said, everyone, this is Dr. Tom O'Brien. Dr. O'Brien, what's up, man?
Hey, how are you, Brian? It's really good to be with you.
Yeah, really good. So anyways, you know, we were talking about what to do before this. And like, frankly, I just kind of want to jump into it. So, you know, just so everybody hears to get behind the scenes, usually when people come on, I ask, like, what's going on in their world? Because I want to be able to provide value back to the people who come on this show, who talk with you guys, right? It's like, hey, what are you working on? What are you talking about? What's, like, just interesting to talk about these days?
Instead of coming on and just
talking about the same talk track that you probably talk about over and over again. And you told me about something really cool that you're working on. So I'm actually just going to stop, and I'd love for you to just sort of give a background on what it is that you're working on and sort of how it came about, and then we could dive into it a little bit.
Oh, well, thank you. I think a question is, what puts fire in your belly? You know, what gets me up in the morning? And I travel the world and I lecture all over at medical conferences. I was in Sao Paulo, Brazil in October, in Rome in November, and I'm going to India in 10 days. To teach this. And it's something that we all kind of know at one level, but we don't pay attention to, especially our doctors, our integrative doctors, our holistic doctors, our functional medicine doctors. They'll sit there and go, yeah, I know that. Well, but are you checking it? Well, no, we don't. Why not? So, you know, the Center for Disease Control tells us that 14 of the 15 top causes of death in the world today are chronic inflammatory diseases. It's always inflammation, always. Everything of the top 15, except for unintentional injuries. You know, you're in a car accident or something like that. Everything else, whether it's Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or rheumatoid or cardiovascular disease or diabetes, Hashimoto's thyroid, lupus, psoriasis, rheumatoid, it doesn't matter. They all have the same mechanism, and that is they're all inflammatory diseases, which means that the immune system has been activated. So when you understand why the immune system gets activated and you deal with the why, then the immune system calms down. And when your immune system calms down, your rheumatoid goes into remission. Your Hashimoto's thyroid comes back with normal blood tests and your energy's back again. It doesn't matter what your brain fog is gone. Your recurrent miscarriages are gone. My wife, who when she was 19 at her first pap smear, they told her it was abnormal. Come back in 6 months. And she did, and she followed their advice and came back, and she kept coming back. And after the third one was abnormal, they said, do you smoke? She said, well, a little. I said, well, that could cause this. So she stopped immediately. But they kept coming back positive. This went on for 4 years until one day the doctor got called out of the room. So she looked at her own file and she saw precancerous lesions. She saw the big C word, which wow. really scared her. So she called a friend, a nutritionist at the time, and the nutritionist immediately said, stop gluten. Stop gluten now. And so, okay, she did. Now, my wife, when she was a child, growing up in a small village in Poland, she had asthma really bad. And oftentimes the inhalers didn't work. And she said that she made trips to the ER about once every 2 months or so to because she couldn't breathe. They rushed her to the hospital. And this went on for years. And she was on an inhaler when she was 19, 20, 21 and having these abnormal pap smears. But she went gluten-free. Her lungs got better in 2 weeks. She never took an inhaler again. And the pap smear, the next pap smear 6 months down the road was normal. So it was a sensitivity to wheat that caused her problems to manifest in her lungs and in her reproductive system. That's an example of an environmental trigger that is going to pull at the chain. You know, you pull at a chain, it always breaks at the weakest link. It's at one end, the middle, the other end. It's your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys, your reproductive system. It doesn't matter. Wherever the weak link is, that's where the chain's going to break. And the pull on the chain is inflammation. Now, every doctor knows this, but not many doctors think about it. They deal with the lungs, or they deal with the reproductive system. They look for genetic vulnerabilities to not using methylfolate very well. And that's important to check all those things. But they don't look for what's the cause of the inflammation. Where is it coming from? And I've been talking about this for so many years now on stage. And when I first come on stage, after I'm introduced, you know, you see some people in the room and they're leaning back in their chair and they've got their arms crossed. You know, they're just kind of waiting to see whether or not they're going to be entertained or not. And within 3 to 5 minutes, as soon as I start showing slides, they're uncrossed their arms, they're leaning forward, they've got a pen in their hand, and they're taking notes. You know, it's like, oh my God, I didn't know this. And so it's very cool, you know, when you have an audience like that that listens, and then they start taking notes, and then they start applying this. And I realize that the world needs to know this. The world needs to know these basic concepts, which will give you longevity and a much higher quality of life. Much higher. And so we're putting together an event that'll be coming up in a couple of months. It's an online docuseries, and I've interviewed pretty close to 70, I think it is now, world experts. I went to Israel, I went to Italy, I went to England, to France, Canada, interviewing world experts on this topic of inflammation. And our event is called The Inflammation Equation, Decoding the Path to Optimal Well-Being. Everyone wants optimal well-being, but, you know, we're like mice in a cage on the wheel. Just keep running and running and running. I'll try this for a couple of weeks, and then I'll try that, and then I'll try some smoothies, and I'm going to kale, and then I'm going to try this vitamin, and I'll try this. And we're running and running and running, trying to get a handle on how to have optimal well-being. Well, what we suggest is that you consider that your immune system is the armed forces in your body. It's there to protect you. There's an army, a navy, an air force, a marines, a coast guard. We call them IgA, IgG, IgE, IgM, different branches of the immune system there to protect you. And usually they're pretty dormant. You know, they're just hanging around and calm and peaceful until they get called out. And when they get called out, they go into action. So the question is, what is it that's activating your immune system? That's what you have to find out. And a very common trigger, of course, is mold. And so what you guys are doing on this podcast is so critically important for people to appreciate. Oh, you know, there's just a little mold on my shower curtain. It's not a big deal. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You're smelling that all day, every day. Now, of the
5 different types of Alzheimer's. Inhalation Alzheimer's is 60 to 65% of all Alzheimer's. That means what you breathe that goes right up through your nose, straight up to the memory center of the brain, where when it's mold, you inhale this stuff, you breathe it, and it activates an immune response to fight the spores that you've just inhaled up your nose.
And can we just, pause on that real quick, because I think it's really...
Say that once more.
So I want to pause on that real quick and just like make sure that we're hitting this, because this is really, really important. First off, inhalational Alzheimer's is a generally new concept in the grand scheme of understanding this stuff.
Not to functional medicine practitioners. It's 10, 15 years when the papers started coming out on that. So to the general medical community, it's a newer concept. Yes.
Yeah. And before that, the idea is that Alzheimer's, you're just kind of like stuck with it if you get it. Like you either get it or you don't. This type of Alzheimer's, this inhalational Alzheimer's, is one that we actually have much more control over whether or not we get or not, because we can control the air that we're breathing much more than, you know, your APOE4 trigger, your different genetic markers and all that stuff. And 65, I didn't know this number was this high, 65% of all Alzheimer's diagnoses are from inhalation Alzheimer's, is what you're saying.
I mean, That's correct. That's why
we're talking about healing two-thirds or preventing two-thirds of Alzheimer's cases by understanding that you're triggering the response in your brain area, the inflammatory response from air that you're breathing. That's why I just want to hit this. That's such a huge thing that I don't want to gloss over. That's a big
thing. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. That's why NASA, and they never talk about this to the press, there's no way humans can ever go to Mars. It's impossible because, it takes a couple of years to get there, but people die. You die on the way of accelerated aging. Astronauts age quickly in space. So NASA gave the contracts to David Furman at the Buck Institute of Aging to figure out why. And what they found out was that the aging process is highly increased in space when there's zero gravity. So they age much, much quicker. Now, Furman,
what was the reason? Why?
Well,
is it oxidative stress? Like, what is it?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One of them was that the air was so toxic in the shuttles, and they didn't realize it was toxic. So you'd hear, hello, Houston, this is the shuttle, and blah, 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 blah. And Houston would say, shuttle, can you repeat that, please? And they'd repeat it. And then the guys at Houston would just kind of look at each other. It's like, what? What's wrong with this guy? And they never talk about that, but the astronauts were going loopy in space. Why? It's the air they were breathing, because everything in there is plastic, everything on the inside, and plastic outgasses phthalates, chemicals used to mold plastic. It outgasses phthalates into the air, and they were inhaling high concentrations of these toxic chemicals, creating inflammation in their brain, and here comes the brain fog, and here comes the brain dysfunction. So NASA financed the studies to figure out what to do about this and how do you generate fresh air. So they financed the studies on houseplants. And what they published is that 2 6-inch houseplants in a 10 by 10 room absorbs over 74% of the toxins in the air.
Really?
And they generate oxygen. So if you've got 8 rooms in your house, you go buy 20 little houseplants. And you just need to know which ones, and you buy the houseplants and you put them in the room. And people say, well, I don't have a green thumb. They're going to die. Then you buy more. You don't be silly about this, that you put these plants in your bedroom, in your children's bedrooms, because it cleans the air. It's always best to also get air filtration systems in your home. But houseplants are an inexpensive way of cleaning your air.
What do they absorb specifically?
Say it again.
What do they absorb specifically?
Trichloral ethylenes, benzene, mold spores. They pull them down into the roots. I mean, it's remarkable. And, you know, you go to my website, thedr.com/plants, and here's the study from NASA. Download the study. And here's the pictures of the house plants. You say, oh, I've seen these before. Oh, yeah, my grandmother had those plants in her house. You know, and you get some house plants. And that's one of the little things you do to reduce some of the environmental toxins that we're all being exposed to. You see, there's, Brian, it's critically important. I mean, I wish I knew how to get to your generation a little bit better, you know.
Well, ask me. Let's see if I have any tips.
Well, the problem is that the younger generation now, I don't know if you know this, but for the last 5 years, the World Health Organization has said every year, life expectancy of newborn children in the U.S. is going down. Every year, it's going down. That children born today are expected to live a shorter life than their parents. Autoimmune diseases are going up 4 to 9% a year, every year. It's like, wake up, world, wake up. But we don't want to hear this kind of stuff. And so we live, most of us, excuse me, but we live in la-la land. And we think, well, you know, if I do this, I'm going to be fine. Well, no, you're not, you know. But so we're doing this event. I'm bringing it back around. We're doing this event called the inflammation equation because it's the low-grade inflammation that our immune system activated, trying to protect us, creates this inflammation that's causing the tissue damage, which progresses into tissue dysfunction, which progresses into tissue dis-ease, which progresses into tissue disease, and then we get a diagnosis. And then you want to do something about it. But it's been going on for years before you ever had symptoms. Every Parkinson's patient, because that's usually an older person's disease, every Parkinson's patient for 20, 25 years has had gut problems. Almost all of them constipation and other gut problems. Well, your microbiome was way out of balance and there was too many of the bad bacteria that caused the misfolding of the alpha-synuclein, the protein that accumulates in the brain and causes Parkinson's. It begins in the gut 25 years earlier. And these misfolded proteins go up neuron by neuron, up the vagus nerve, up to the brain, up the spinal cord, up to the brain, and they have a magnetic pull to the area of the brain, which causes Parkinson's. That's where the inflammation occurs. Very slow process, takes 20, 25 years, but the mechanism's been going on all this time. And nobody does anything about it until they start getting shakes. And then they go get a diagnosis, and then they're, you know, they do these heroic measures to try to reduce the progression, which help a little bit, but not very much. My point is, there it's going on for 20 or 25 years beforehand. Now, I'd like to share a slide here, and I'll describe it to your audio audience. This is from David Furman at the Buck Institute. And as you see in this slide, Brian, there are three gears in the center that are connected to each other so that when one turns, it turns the next one, that turns the third one, you know, the way kids' games can be set up. My son is 3 years old and he's learning in these kind of games now where to put the gears so they don't lock and they'll move and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the gears on the left, this is lifestyle. And here, this is from David Furman. And he labels chronic infections as bacteria and viruses and bugs, mold, physical inactivity, obesity, the ratio of the good guys and the bad guys in your gut, the foods that you eat, too much stress and stress hormones, not enough rejuvenating sleep, and chemicals that you're exposed to. Those are all on one gear, on each tooth of the gear. So when that gear turns, because you've got too many of one of those, the gear in the middle turns, which is your immune system, and that's chronic inflammation that begins. And so the inflammation begins, so that middle gear turns, which turns the gear on the right side, which is type 2 diabetes, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, cancer, depression, anxiety, autoimmune diseases, neurodegenerative diseases. It just depends which gear you experience. Determine, you know, like, where's your weak link, which is determined by genetics. And this is a geek term, antecedents, how you live your life. You eat tuna fish 2-3 times a week, you likely have mercury poisoning because tuna has mercury in it. That's an antecedent. So the weak link in your chain is determined by your genetics. You referred to APOE4 for Alzheimer's. That's a weak link in the chain. But then how you live your life, those two come together, that determines where, which link is going to break when you pull on the chain so hard. But it's all of the things on the left side of the picture, categorized as lifestyle and lifestyle exposures, that determines whether your immune system gets activated or not, which then determines the weak link on the right side, what disease you're more vulnerable to. And this is the basic premise that David Furman and his team begins when they're talking to NASA. Get them to understand the amount of environmental triggers our astronauts are exposed to is always going to activate the immune system, always, because it's the job of your immune system to protect you. And when it gets activated to protect you, it saves your life. There's nothing wrong with inflammation. It saves our life every day. It's excessive inflammation that's the problem. So when you have excessive exposure to these things on the left side of lifestyle that activates a continuous, like, for example, if you have a sensitivity to gluten and you feel fine when you eat gluten, you don't get any gut problems, but you feel fine. But if your immune system is fighting wheat, which is so very, very common, then you're creating the inflammation that'll manifest on the right side of the drawing with autoimmune diseases or neurodegenerative diseases or a lack of quality sleep. It doesn't matter what the symptoms are. The mechanism is the activated immune system that triggers all of it. All of it, without exception. Cancer, yeah, so cardiovascular disease, diabetes, it doesn't matter. So our event is on that. Our event is on this topic because when people understand this topic, and we've got the world leaders in immunology, Professor Yehuda Schoenfeld, Tel Aviv University in Israel, when I interviewed him, 26 of the PhD students, the medical doctors who went back to get their PhD in immunology from his institute, from his department. There are many, many more, but 26 of them chair departments of immunology in medical schools and hospitals around the world. They're his students. This is the godfather. And when he talks about this, he wrote a paper on this that it was effects of a gluten-free diet on non-celiac autoimmune diseases. And what he showed was that in 65% of the studies that he looked at, over 78% of the people get better on a gluten-free diet. This was confirmed in 65% of the studies. So it's not every patient every time with an autoimmune disease. But there were 28 different autoimmune diseases he identified that get better on a gluten-free diet most of the time. Because if that's your environmental trigger activating the immune system, it's going to create the inflammation that's going to manifest wherever your weak link is. And if your weak link is your joints, you get rheumatoid arthritis. If the weak link is your skin, you get psoriasis. If the weak link is your reproductive system, you get recurrent miscarriages. It doesn't matter what the symptoms are. It's the mechanism that we want people to understand. And yes, one more point, please. When you understand the mechanism, then you start asking really good questions about, do I have this low-grade inflammation going on? I feel fine, but do I have this inflammation? And that's the kind of questions we want everyone to be going back to their healthcare practitioners and asking.
Yeah, listen, when you ask that question, if someone answers no, listen, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but if someone, if like, do I have a low-grade like chronic inflammatory issue going on? I feel like the answer of no is almost non-existent in the way that we all, all the products that are in our houses, all the foods that we eat, all the this that we do, all the that we do. I know this, so like when you explain this to me, and if someone's listening to this, like for me, it's not so much like, do I have a chronic, like a low-grade chronic inflammatory thing going on? I think the answer is probably yes. I think from that point, it's, all right, well, how do I identify like how much is it? How significant is it? What is the trigger that's causing it? And when I think of this stuff, you know, I think of this stuff similar to how like, you know, the Warren Buffetts of the world talk about investing, but almost in a negative way. And then we can flip it around. There's compound interest. Everybody knows what compound interest is, right? The reason a lot of these guys are so wealthy is because they invest into, you know, stock market. And then over time, years and years go by, compound interest, next thing you know, you read these stories that grandma put in $5,000 in 1940, and now she has $2 million or whatever, right? And so that's the effect of compound interest. Our body is essentially creating compound interest every day that we move forward. And it can do it in either direction, right? It could do it in good and it could do it in bad. If I'm doing things every day that's going to reduce my inflammatory load, now every day that goes by, there's a benefit for me happening in the long term. Whereas if I'm waking up and I'm doing things that are not good for me and I'm eating McDonald's and my sleep sucks and like all these things and I got all, you know, all these toxic chemicals from my cleaning products in my house and I got mold in my HVAC and I got all this stuff going on, the effect is now the other way. And you've got this negative compound interest that's going on and it's going to hit you at the end, right? And so when you think about money, it's like, what is my retirement age? How much money am I going to have when I get here, right? And you kind of have this goal over here, but it's so far away. That's why so many people don't do it, because with the goal is farther away, you're less likely to be diligent about it because the effect is way longer down the road. And people want to have like their reward immediately, right? That's like kind of a common human nature thing is I want my reward right when I do something. And so I think I've been thinking about this personally, and there's a lot of stuff that I'm doing to try to like think about this and have like a positive health compound interest on myself down the road, right? But this concept and talking through it, and you know, we talked about one or two things here, right? But you know, I'd love to maybe go a little bit more into sort of what is kind of covered, just generally like summarized topics in the summit. Is it these are the things that are causing it? Is it these are the things you can do to identify specific stuff? Is it these are the things you can do to reduce it? Like what is sort of the overall theme on what somebody walks away from when they're done with this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Thank you so much. And before I answer it, I want to acknowledge that your line of thinking is what my goal is for every attendee. Now, you've had years of studying this stuff and being blown away by what you hear every once in a while from your guests on your podcast. And so you've heard this again and again, and you're used to being blown away or startled by what you hear. But for many of your listeners, they've never heard any of this. They don't know this. So your questions are very sophisticated questions. You understand the dynamic. Although you looked at Furman's drawing, and you got it right away. You understand it. So, you know, that's a brilliant drawing because it makes it so clear for the everyday person who hasn't had a podcast interviewing experts every week or 2 weeks, you know, for years and understanding, hearing all these concepts. For people who don't have that background knowledge of the dichotomy between what you hear from your family doctor and what you're hearing in chats and podcasts, they're lost. They just don't know this. So the first thing we have to do is have the experts explain in day-to-day language what the problems are with the world we live in today and where you like us. Let me give you one example, and this is a jaw dropper. This is a study that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And the editors of the journal made a comment. They said, this is an elegant study using sophisticated biomarkers to prove their point. Now, the editors of the Journal of the American Medical Association don't say that very often. I mean, that's a stamp of approval that rarely you get. But this research article came out of Harvard. They looked at couples going to assisted fertility centers. And everyone listening here today either knows somebody, is close to somebody, or themselves have considered assisted fertility centers. It's so very common now that infertility is an issue like never before in history. And you know, they spend tens of thousands of dollars and lots of emotional stress. And what these researchers did was they ruled out all of the known common contributors to success or failure in implantation. They ruled out obesity. They ruled out alcohol consumption. They ruled out cigarette smoking. They ruled out exercise or no exercise. They ruled out income levels. They ruled out socioeconomic class. They ruled out race. They ruled out all of these known factors in an elegant way to dial down on one point. How many servings of fruits and vegetables is the woman eating while they're going through assisted fertility centers? And, well, we all know the answer to that. The more fruits and vegetables you eat, the better. So they put them into categories, the lowest number of servings per day, the next, the third, and the highest number of servings per day of fruits and vegetables, conventional fruits and vegetables. The results were startling. Women in the highest category of consumption of conventional fruits and vegetables per day compared to women in the lowest category of consumption of fruits and vegetables per day, women in the highest category had an 18% less likelihood of successful implantation. The more fruits and vegetables you eat, the less likely you'll be successful. If they got pregnant, those same women in the highest category of consumption of fruits, conventional fruits and vegetables per day, if you got pregnant, you had a 26% less likelihood of a live birth.
Wait, so we're saying the more fruits and vegetables they ate, the less likely they were to have the implantation be successful.
That's exactly right. And okay. If they got pregnant, 26% less likelihood of a live birth. They had miscarriages and stillbirths. This is like, wait, what did you say? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's mind twisting. But you've got the editors of the journal, the American Medical Association, has said this is an elegant study using sophisticated biomarkers to prove their point. And the study came from Harvard. It's jaw dropping. Now, there was another category of women who were eating organic. And so they took them out and they looked at just the organic consumption people. Same, they divided them into fourths. And if they were eating organic, the results were the exact opposite. The more fruits and vegetables you ate, the more likely you were to be successful and have a healthy pregnancy and delivery.
Wow.
It's like, what? What did you say? I mean, it's mind-twisting. The reason, and this is why I need to get to your generation. My next book is going to be about this concept. The reason, the most likely reason, and you can't, you know, say definitively, but with all the science, it certainly makes sense. This generation of people of childbearing age has absorbed more toxic chemicals on a daily basis into their body than ever before in recorded history. From the home cleaning supplies, to the foods, to the nail polish, to our environments, our convenient environments with all the plastic in our environment, which all outgas phthalates into the air. And so you're breathing phthalates. Well, I don't smell anything. That doesn't mean anything at all. You know, if you ever see the sun coming through a window at the right angle, sometimes you can see the dust in the air. That's what you're breathing. Yep. That's why there's a dust mold test, is because that's what's in the air, what you're breathing. You're breathing the flame retardant chemicals in the sheets and the blankets that you go to sleep under, that outgas for years. After 20, 30 washings, they still have the chemicals that outgas minute amounts of chemical, minute amounts. And there's no evidence that the amount of chemicals that are outgassing from your sheets and blankets is toxic to humans. There's no evidence at all. But it's accumulative in your body, and it accumulates for years, for years. I'll give you one more study on this concept. Chicago, 2016, 346 pregnant women in the eighth month of pregnancy. They did urine tests on them, and they measured how many phthalates do they have in their urine, chemicals used to mold plastic. They're also categorized as endocrine disruptors, hormone-disrupting chemicals. And they divided them into fourths, the lowest, the next, the third, and the highest. They followed the offspring of those pregnancies. And when the children turned 7 years old, they did Wechsler IQ tests on them, the official IQ test. Not much in medicine is all or every. This was every child whose mother was in the highest category of phthalates in urine and pregnancy compared to the children in the lowest category of phthalates in urine and pregnancy. Every child in the highest category, their IQ was 7 points lower, 6.7 to 7.4 points lower. It doesn't mean anything to anyone until you realize that a 1 point difference in IQ is noticeable. A 7 point difference is a difference between a child working really hard, getting straight A's in school, and a child working really hard, seriously working, getting straight C's in school. That child doesn't have a chance in hell of ever excelling. Then you just go to Google, Dr. Google, and you type in phthalates and neurogenesis. Here come the studies. The higher level the phthalates, the more inhibition of brain cell and nerve cell growth. So moms today, unfortunately, are so toxic, babies are swimming in a toxic soup of amniotic fluid. You may have heard that newborn babies at birth, when they check the umbilical cord blood, the average is 186 chemicals in the blood that are not supposed to be there. Every newborn baby, because moms have been accumulating these minute amount of toxins for years. There's no evidence that the amount of toxins that you absorb from applying nail polish is toxic to humans. That's how they get away with this. It's called the Toxic Substance Control Act, and it was passed in 1976. And the chemical industry spends millions of dollars every year to make sure nobody touches the TSCA. No one touches that because you have to prove a chemical is toxic with the amount of chemical you're exposed to in everyday life within a 24-hour period. It's toxic to human cells. It's not.
But they accumulate. It's the difference between acute toxicity and long-term.
That's exactly right. Our generation today, because your parents were absorbing these chemicals, we laughed about it when I was young. We called it better living through chemistry back in the 60s, and we were talking about LSD. But that's when the chemical industry came out with that slogan, better living through chemistry, because we're making better soaps and, you know, technological advancements. But our generation started absorbing these toxins. We produced the kids, that's your generation, that had more toxins, but you've been accumulating more than even our generation did. So now the young ones today of childbearing age. My next book, which will come out next year, the working title, I don't know what the final title is, but the working title, Healthy Conception, Healthy Pregnancy, Healthy Delivery, Happy Baby. That we need a generation of children that think outside the box. that don't have the restrictions that our generation has or your generation has, because the planet is still going downhill. 4 to 9% increase every year in autoimmune diseases. Lifespan of newborns born today and for the last 5 years has gone down every year. We're going in the wrong direction. So we need kids thinking outside the box. And to do that, they have to have brains that are working really well. But to have brains that are working really well, we have to detox the mothers before they get pregnant. And it takes 6 months to a year to fully detox, not 2 weeks of some product that so many marketing companies do. And excuse me, but you know, show me the science where you make a difference in someone's life with a 2-week detox. They've got great marketing and people do this because they want to be healthier, but it's 6 months to a year to get this stuff out of your body. And you've got to do it before you get pregnant so that your future baby has the best shot of being their own little Einstein, you know, thinking outside the box.
Now, let me say that is that, you know, 6 months to a year sounds like a long time.
It is a long time.
It's really not when you think about somebody like, take the having the timeline of having a kid off of it and just say, hey, listen, I've been exposed to all of these things over time. And within 6 months to a year, I can, I'm not going to say completely reverse that, but I can make a very significant impact, like improvement in what my toxic load is. So like anybody listening, I know a lot of times when, even when I talk about certain things, the immediate response that people have is sometimes like a fear-based response. Like, Oh, there's so much going on. There's nothing I can do. I'm exposed to this. I'm exposed to that. The mothers have this. This has that. Oh, we're all doomed. And that's not the point, right? And I think the positive spin on what we just heard is that you can have a significant reduction in your toxic load in 6 to 12 months. And for somebody who's been collecting all of this stuff and being exposed to it for 20, 25 years, a 6 to 12 month little blip in that to kind of reset yourself and now reestablish what maybe a lifespan might be for someone who doesn't have all of that in their body now starting over. Like that's the positive message that sometimes I think gets lost because we get, and I do the same thing. We get so passionate about like trying to raise the awareness of like the things that we're not aware of.
Yeah, and, you're absolutely right.
You know, different people just process stuff differently. And some people respond to a different way of hearing it. So, but for those of you who don't, because I know not everybody does, and I've been learning this over the last year, which is why I'm starting to kind of talk about things in different ways for different people, because I want everyone to absorb stuff, not just the people that resonate with the one way that I say something, is that this is a very positive thing. And exactly. The docuseries that you're doing is going to help show and outline a path to be able to do that. And, you know, you talk about a 6 to 12, I mean, there are people who are on weight loss journeys that take longer than 6 to 12 months. And then you see their before and their afters and they look amazing afterwards, right? And they're so into it at that point. And like that changes their life forever. And you can see it because there was a heavy person now like a ripped, jacked, you know, person afterwards. But like, this is the same thing that could happen in kind of a similar time span, if not less. So I think it's really awesome. I love that you put all the time in. I mean, 70 people that are being included in this. Maybe when you do, you know, Inflammation Equation Season 2, you give me a ring and I'll jump on and talk about some stuff too. But this is awesome. And I think it's really helpful. So where can people find out about that, about the summit specifically, and then anything else, Dr. O'Brien related?
Yeah, well, thanks so much. There's one more thing I would say, and that is there's a simple test now that is science improves. And I'll say it this way. You know, if I were to say to you in 1990 or 1995, you know, in 25, 30 years, I'm going to hold this little black thing in my hand that we call an iPhone today. But when I hold this thing in my hand, if I push on a couple of buttons, I can tell you within 5 seconds that the air particulate matter in San Diego right now is 37. Not bad. Good day to exercise outside. But in Malaitha, Australia, is 45. That's a warning zone. And if you take a look here in Costa Rica, it's 179. Do not exercise outside today. I can tell you anything you want to know because I've got the encyclopedia of the world in my hand.
Yep.
If I had told you that in 1990, you would have thought I was watching too much Star Trek. You know, that it's beyond the realm of possibilities. Science improves. Technology improves. The same is true in laboratory medicine. And there's a new kid on the block that Mayo Clinic published the first study on this in January of 2016. Most of the lab tests being done today, the technology is from the 1980s, the 1990s. It's okay, but it's wrong 2 or 3 out of 10 times, most of the tests. I mean, completely wrong. And doctors have always accepted, well, but it's the lab. You know, the lab's done the test. It's a good lab. They're nice people there. It's a good lab. But the technology is old technology. There's a new technology called silicone chip technology. And Mayo Clinic called it the new era in laboratory medicine. And their sensitivity and specificity, that means the accuracy, is 97 to 100%. Never before in laboratory history have you heard of numbers like that. But they have that now all the time. The laboratory is called Vibrant Wellness. And they have a test called the total tox burden. And you do a urine analysis, total tox burden, and you find out, do I have high levels of toxic chemicals right now that my immune system is fighting? And you find out exactly if you do or not. And in my language, I would call it an OMG, an oh my God, when you get the test results back, because we don't get any negatives that come back on a first test. The follow-up better be much, much better. But everyone has high levels of toxic chemicals, whether it's mold metabolites, heavy metals, organophosphates, volatile organic compounds, glyphosate, all of these chemicals that we're being exposed to on a daily basis. Every single person we've checked, and I've asked my friends who are very busy practitioners, they say, Jill, when's the last time you got a normal on a first total toxic burden? And she just looks at me like, what kind of a question is that? Never. It never comes back normal. But it tells us, where do we have to focus to start pulling this stuff out? So you can look up that test, total tox burden. It's on my website. You'll see it there. Or go to Vibrant Wellness and look at it there. And so we can identify, where are you on this spectrum? And what is it? And then it's easy to talk about, how do you get it out? It takes some time, depending on what it is you've got in you, but we can get it out of there. So how do you learn more? Well, our website is thedr.com, thedoctor.com. Just don't spell the word doctor out. And the website that it's not quite ready today yet for registration will be theinflammationequation.com. So if you go to thedr.com and just download anything, you know, and give us your email address, we'll send you an announcement when we're ready to go. It's going to be a couple of months from now when it launches. But you'll get a chance and you'll hear all these world experts talking about what the problems are, why they're there, how do you identify it, what do you do about it, and how do you move forward. And you'll get that information in my kind of language, which is with visuals, like you pull at a chain, it breaks at the weakest link, and those kinds of concepts that we're pretty good at helping to interpret this geeky language into everyday words. So that's thedr.com, thedr.com.
I love it. This is really cool. And, you know, everyone go check it out when it's time, and take a look at the summit, because it's a broad scope view of a very large problem, as opposed to somehow a very bold focus view that we do a lot, you know, in what we talk about here. So it's important to know that mold is not the only thing that's causing your inflammation. I think we've talked about that enough to where people understand that, but we also focus on that because, you know, like we are the people that do that, right? So this is a really cool way to get a larger view of something that truly is affecting like the long-term health of all of us. So thanks, Dr. Brian, for coming on and chatting about this and sharing this with us and sharing some of the stuff that you did. There's a lot of really awesome tidbits and study references and things that kind of help put things in perspective for people. So thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Oh, one last point I forgot to say, and this is important. On that study about couples at assisted fertility centers, those that ate organic had the complete opposite. You were classified as eating organic if you ate 3 meals a week, not 21 meals a week organic, 3 meals a week. And it completely reversed the outcome of going to an assisted fertility center. That's an important point to understand. You don't have to be perfect. Baby steps win the ball game. And the theory of the authors was, well, if they're doing organic 3 times a week, then they're probably doing other things to try to stay healthier.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a great thing to add, because I think a lot of people, it's like, oh, I do my everything organic. And it's like, you do these little things. It's that compounded interest thing again. You do these things. And then once you make that change, it becomes a habit. It becomes now just a part of your everyday routine. And then 3 months later, you do a couple of the little things that in 3 months now become a part of your everyday and who you are. And then you do a couple other things. Next thing you know, you're doing all the things.
You're doing all the things, right?
It just, and it all heads up. So that thank you for adding that. It's a very good point.
You bet. Thank you.
All right.
So that's it for today's show, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe and give a rating wherever you get your podcasts. It'll help spread the word to those who really need it the most.